Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hour 2 on a Tuesday starts right now here on the BetMGM Network. I'm Chelsea Messenger, he's Michael Jenkins, and you are listening to The Daily Tip. Coming up in the next hour, we'll start with the first head coach fired in the NFL this season, and it's right in my neighborhood. Was Brian Callahan really the problem, or the Titans? Do they have bigger issues? We'll talk about that in this segment. At 7:20, tonight is Game 2 of the NLCS between the Dodgers and Brewers. We give you our best bets for that. And then it's on to Teaser Tuesday, which is my favorite way to bet on the NFL besides props, where you give yourself 6 points in your favor and you combine several spread bets and try to pick some winners, kind of banking on the fact that some of these lines in the NFL are very, very sharp. All right, Jenks, so it has begun. Local talk radio is now an absolute zoo. Since the Titans fired head coach Brian Callahan yesterday, all of the calls have started coming in with the worst suggestions you could possibly think of. And I understand casual fans are not super dialed in to what coaches have been doing lately, but it always feels like people love to like shout out the biggest names that like maybe if you haven't looked into what they've been doing recently, you would have changed your mind and said, hey, maybe Bill Belichick is not the best suggestion for the Titans' next head coach. But like, this is what you always hear. It's a steady diet of John Gruden needs to be the next head coach of the Titans. It needs to be Bill Belichick. Hell, even some people joking about Jeff Fisher, don't joke about that. Like, that's been so long. I don't even know what he's doing these days. So this is always what you get. And I know it wasn't that long ago, you know, in Washington where you guys were looking for a new head coach, but it felt more level and it felt like they went for, I don't know, better names. And I'm not saying that the Titans are going to go for John Gruden or any of these people. It's just that's always the headlines that catch everybody's attention.
What did Jeff Fisher do? Didn't he go 7-9? Wasn't that the thing with him before he went to 17 games? He was always going 7-9. That's a funny suggestion.
He was amazingly mediocre.
He was. He was great at being slightly below mediocre. Like, not 500, but he'll get you those 7 wins. Fans always lose their minds and go for the big names without looking at fit and without looking at recent results. Like, Bill Belichick right now is a dumpster fire. You're not going to hire Bill Belichick. Let's bring in Urban Meyer. You want to do that? Remember him in Jacksonville? You don't want to do that. Like, John Gruden? You have a real possibility that, especially with a guy like Gruden, where he knows the game, yeah, there's a possibility, but also it's been a long time since he's been a head coach, and you never know how it's going to fare, and then you have all the legal issues that sort of follow him wherever he goes now. It's much better to look at guys who fit your organization, guys who are coming up, guys who maybe can coach your franchise quarterback, for example. The one thing the NFL always does in particular is they just recycle guys, like again and again and again and again. You know, even if you're a head coach like Matt Eberflus, isn't he down in Dallas right now? I forget. Yeah. So these guys always land somewhere in the NFL just in a different role, as opposed to saying, maybe we should think out the box here and find someone that isn't some sort of, not necessarily a has-been, but someone who has been recycled over and over and over in the National Football League.
Yeah, one of the names that the hosts were bringing up was Matt Nagy. And I'm like, do you mean the guy that was booed at his kids' basketball games because he was so bad with the Bears? No! We don't want him. Like, maybe try somebody else and give somebody else an opportunity. And I understand that's difficult to say because Brian Callahan was that type of hire. We're like, hey, we're going to hire a young guy and maybe give him a chance and maybe he can blossom into something great. And it turns out he didn't even know the rules of the football game. So maybe we go a step above that. But usually it does feel like people have like two separate theories. You either go for somebody who has been a head coach and has been fired a few times, like you said, the recycled coach tree, or you go with like an up and coming coordinator, which I feel like I lean towards that. But it does feel like now watching Brian Callahan trying to run an entire team, that there is a different skill set that you have to use as a head coach as opposed to just learning the X's and O's and being a good coordinator, especially when it comes to like the offensive guys, or hell, I guess even the defensive guys as well, where you have to learn to be like the CEO of the team. And some coordinators just don't have that.
Well, and especially if you're talking about a Titans team that has their potential future in Cam Ward, you've got to bring in someone that can bring him along. Like, I would think you've got to bring in someone who has some sort of offensive mind, akin to what the Bears did with Ben Johnson, right? They saw that Caleb Williams was not being developed. They believed in his talent. That's why they drafted him number one overall. So they say, okay, this isn't working out. Whoever we bring in next has to have those head coaching credentials, but also has to bring along our franchise quarterback, because what is the point if we bring in someone who doesn't do that and we develop other areas, but our franchise QB just kind of sits here and slowly deteriorates or doesn't develop at a rate that makes us a good football team? Because clearly you have to have a great quarterback to have great play in the NFL. So I would hope, I mean, you would think that would go into the calculus.
Yeah, that has to be number one on the priority list, because obviously that is the most difficult piece to find on a winning franchise in the NFL. And it feels like there is some potential for Cam Ward. And I understand that Brian Callahan threw Cam Ward under the bus multiple times this year. I feel like that was very unfair. Cam Ward is a rookie. Like, don't ask him to do too much. I feel like good head coaches do not put too much on the shoulders of their rookies. But I do think the Titans tried to do that last time. So, like, this is me trying to help the Titans learn from their mistakes. Because they brought in Brian Callahan. They say, oh, well, he worked with Joe Burrow and the Bengals offense was really good. But how much do you think was Joe Burrow and how much do you think was Brian Callahan? And we've seen people in the NFL make this mistake before, because who is it, Nathaniel Hackett, where they were like, oh, he coached Aaron Rodgers to success, he's going to be a great head coach. He was not a great head coach. A lot of it was Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, and I believe, I don't know how much Brian Callahan even called the plays with the Bengals, but certainly you can, which is crazy to think about, but yeah, if you have
an
offensive
guy.
Yeah. But you can be, you know, you can be someone who, for example, I think a good example is Eric Bieniemy back when he was with the Chiefs, right? And so he was the offensive coordinator, and then he bounces around, came here to DC, went out to UCLA, and once he was out from under the wing of Andy Reid, he was just completely ineffective. So, yeah, he had the title, but when it came to the actual structure of the offense and the play calling, that was Andy Reid. So I don't know the particular situation with Brian Callahan, but the point is, just because you have the title of OC doesn't necessarily mean that you're the offensive mastermind or that you have the talent to go off on your own and be a head coach and run the offense.
Well, he even gave up the play calling duties.
Yeah.
And you're like, you're an offensive guy and you gave up play calling? That's supposed to be the one thing you're good at. And so it's just, it was frustrating altogether. It felt to me that Brian Callahan was not ready to be a head coach. And I don't know like how you're supposed to see that, like, coming in. But here is the biggest problem with the Titans, is that they have fired multiple people now, you know, when it comes to their GMs, when it comes to guys in the front office and head coaches. And it feels like now that the front office is the problem, especially when you look down the road, you know, up north, and see all the success that Mike Vrabel is having with the Patriots. When the Titans chose, you know, their GM and their ownership over Mike Vrabel, I feel like that was their first mistake.
Well, if you're going to have a successful franchise, you have to be aligned from the top down. We saw that in D.C. during the Daniel Snyder years, right? You could bring in all sorts of talent. It doesn't matter if you're not completely on the same page as far as hiring the right people, having the same goals in mind, making sure you spend the money and spend the money properly. Same thing with the Titans. If you look at all the great organizations or the very good organizations in the NFL, the one thing they have in common is the ownership and the GM and the coaches all very much on the same page. And you have turnover when necessary, but more than anything else, you have stability.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of people wonder why Mike Vrabel, still wonder why Vrabel was fired, and it's because he went head-to-head with the front office on a lot of things. Like, I feel like there were things that the Titans did, I don't know, like trading away A.J. Brown, that did not rub him the right way, because the thing is also is that the Titans have not been great at drafting talent. So when you don't draft talent well, and then when you finally hit on a pick and you trade him away in his prime, like, it's just not a good look. So now it feels to me like the Titans are in danger of falling into the category of terrible franchises in the NFL. And now it feels like, you know, they're in the ranks of, like, the Jets kind of feel like that. Like, maybe you put the Giants in that category as well, like the Browns, where it's like all these bad decisions just constantly add up, and it feels like they can't get out of their own way.
Yeah, and now they've got to bring in someone who wants to coach there, because once you develop dysfunction within your organization, then there's not a lot of head coaches, or not necessarily the pool of candidates from which you want to choose.
I know, and I think it's difficult, and it's very easy in hindsight to be like, oh, Brian Callen was a terrible hire. But like, I'll say this about Aaron Glenn. I thought he was a great hire, and look at the Jets now. Do you think that's a matter of the Jets just being a bad organization that nobody can fix?
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, the Jets definitely are a bad organization. They've proven that over the years, no matter who is the head coach. But it sort of also looks like Aaron Glenn is over his head a little bit, which I hate to say six games in, but if you look at the decision-making that we saw against the Broncos, particularly at the half when Garrett Wilson was kind of going back and forth, like, what are we doing? When you're a losing franchise and you're playing not to win, or you're playing not to lose as opposed to playing to win, you're sending a message that, okay, we're not that good, and you're sending that message to what is already a losing organization, which is not the message you want to send.
Oh, absolutely. Let me ask you, as somebody who covers a team that has a defensive-minded head coach, what are the benefits, you think, of having a defensive-minded head coach? Because, you know, the Commanders have obviously Jaden Daniels, and you would think, hey, you need a head coach that can bring him along. Not that you get what I'm saying, is Dan Quinn is a defensive guy. Mm-hmm. But that's worked out nicely. Should the Titans even consider a defensive-minded head coach?
Well, they can, as long as they bring in someone who can coach Cam Ward. The difference with DQ here in D.C. is that they brought in Cliff Kingsbury, right, who is a noted offensive guru. So even if you don't like Cliff Kingsbury as a potential head coach, and at some point he is going to be a head coach again in the NFL, he's definitely sort of rejuvenated his reputation as far as what he can do over the past couple seasons with his work alongside J.D. Five. But the difference is, okay, you bring in a defensive-minded head coach, but also that coach has the wherewithal to say, but the offensive coordinator we're going to bring in is going to be someone who can work hand-in-hand with our hand-chosen franchise quarterback and bring him along, so that way you kind of get the best of both worlds.
Right, yeah. Any of those sound great right about now as a Titans fan. It feels like we can't hire anybody who is the correct hire. Even when Brian Callahan passed down the play-calling duties, he didn't even pass it down to the offensive coordinator or some other guy. And you're like, so we hired an offensive coordinator that we don't even trust to call the plays? That feels like a huge red flag to me. So my next question, Jenks, is do you believe in the dead cat bounce? Because a lot of people have brought that up to me. And I'm like, listen, this is still a very bad team. And if you don't know what the dead cat bounce is, it's when a team fires a head coach and somehow they band together that next week and they win a football game. I just don't see it.
Maybe with some teams, but the expectations were already low. So I wouldn't necessarily, with some franchises, sure. But I feel like with this franchise, I mean, their win total's set at 3.5 right now. It's juiced to the over. Maybe that makes you feel better. But unfortunately with your Titans, I don't know if I would buy that. And plus, what do we know about Mike McCoy? He has a history with the Chargers, but that's about it. So it would be hard for me to buy that.
Yeah, so their interim head coach is going to be Mike McCoy. He did coach the Chargers for a while. At least he knows the rules of the game. But next up for the Titans is playing Mike Vrabel, their former head coach, and a Patriots team that's on the warpath. Or at least it feels like a team that is trending all the way up, could be one of the contenders in the AFC. So maybe if they were playing somebody else this week, because people sold me on saying, hey, Chelsea, they're playing the Raiders this week, maybe they'll win. Wasn't the case. They only scored 10 points. So, Jenks, I do not have high hopes for the Titans facing the Patriots.
Well, I was definitely one of those people that thought they had a chance to get the Raiders. So I thought that might win outright, and I was way off on that. So I'm definitely not going to be on the Titans again. I will not try to sell you a bill of goods. The old snake oil salesman.
Yeah, and the worst part is that the Titans haven't even been covering. Like, I think if you look at the numbers for Brian Callahan, he's been one of the worst covering head coaches in the NFL. So not only is he bad, the market couldn't even be low enough on this Titans team to give them enough points to cover the spread as underdogs. Just embarrassing. All right, coming up next, maybe we'll change the vibes and talk about baseball. We've got postseason baseball on the docket, NLCS Game 2 between the Dodgers and Brewers. It's next on the Daily Tip presented by BetMGM.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. It is Tuesday, October the 14th, and we still have some great postseason baseball in the middle of the week, which is a great feeling, Jenks. But what's not a great feeling is looking at the slate today and seeing one game that I don't feel great about. Like, we saw last night, the margin for error between the Dodgers and Brewers is razor thin. So the Dodgers won game one, 2-1, behind a great performance from Blake Snell, who went 8 strong innings. And the Dodgers scored just enough to beat the Brew Crew in this one. Now you look at game two, and it's Yamamoto versus Freddy Peralta. And Freddy Peralta has great numbers, but we saw it. Oh, I just got an Amber Alert. We saw it against the Cubs that sometimes he can get a little rattled if he gives up some runs early, especially if he's pitching on the road. But the good news is that this game is in Milwaukee, and Freddy Peralta has been very good when playing in American Family Field. So let me just ask you, your first impression of this game, like, did you have a strong feeling, or did you feel like me and saying, great, this is the only game on the slate today, and I don't feel strongly about it?
I mean, I'm probably going to go back to the well here and trust these two pitchers, maybe in the first five like I did yesterday. It didn't work out, but that's just baseball. I also looked at the hockey slate as well. But it's tough when we bet on baseball all season long and you come down to it, which is a natural progression, but you have one game. So I'm not thrilled about it, but I'm kind of like you. It wasn't exactly something that jumped off the page to me.
Yeah, I think that's when you really have to dig deep. Or you say, okay, maybe we will watch this and we will learn, and maybe we'll make a bet on the next game. But listen, it is a big game, and we obviously have to talk about it. But if you are betting on baseball, might as well do it over at BetMGM. Go ahead and use your MLB Parlay Boost token. Swing big on your next MLB parlay. Use this Parlay Boost token to score a bigger payout if your baseball parlay hits. So let's get into it. All right, so Dodgers-Brewers, this is game two between the Dodgers and the Brewers. Dodgers took game one, and they are once again road favorites at minus 125. Brew Crew, if you're interested, plus 105. Total of 7 runs in this game. If you look at first five totals, 3.5 is the number. I know that's been a popular play for us, but Jenks, digging into the numbers, do you like anything when it comes to like a total, you know, a first five bet? Is there anything after a little digging that caught your attention?
I think you can go under 3.5 first five, which is around minus 105 right now. You can go under 4.5, which is minus 145. Maybe that's where I'll go today. But I might even look at the Dodgers too. So if you look at Yoshinobu Yamamoto, I mean, he has been on one for the Dodgers. So, yeah, he had a meh outing against the Phillies last week. But even then, like, his bad outings just are not bad. He gave up 304 innings of work. But that's the exception to the rule. If you look back through the course of the season, in 30 starts this year, that includes the playoffs, he's given up more than three runs in a single outing only five times. And he's been even better on the road. That's the spot he's in today. 9-4, 2.13 ERA. Opponents are batting just 168 against him. And then Freddie Peralta going for the Brewers, one of the most dependable pitchers in the game. Now, in a couple of previous appearances against the Cubs, he wasn't great, but we still have a large enough sample size to know how good he is. He's made 33 starts this season, allowed more than three runs in just four starts. So this is playoff baseball. The total is really low. If you can go first five under four or 3.5, I think is a good number as well, depending on how much juice you want to lay. That's where I'd go.
Here's what scares me is that the recent performances are both of these pitchers, because I understand both these guys are one of the more trustworthy starters in both of these rotations. But we saw it like against the Phillies for Yamamoto, giving up three runs in four innings there. And then Freddie Peralta, like, again, I know you mentioned it, but against the Cubs, a little rattled and gave up a couple home runs in each of those starts. Two home runs in the one on October 4th, and then a home run in the final one, which he gave up three earned runs. And here's the thing about first five unders. You almost need the guys to be, like, lights out, especially when it's 3.5. So I think there is a sabotage factor there. And also, like, this is something we saw with the Mariners and the Blue Jays, where if you see offenses that have been great for the entirety of the regular season, eventually they're going to break out. I think that's what scares me when we have so many dangerous bats on both the Brewers and the Dodgers sides.
I mean, there's no question about it. I mean, ultimately, if you're going to go with one side or the other here, I'm just going to lean into two of the best pitchers in the game. So I know recently these guys haven't been necessarily on their marks, but again, I'd rather look at the whole sample size here, particularly in a game where the total's going to be lower, which we're seeing at a 7. You know, these guys are going to be on tighter leashes. It's playoff baseball. So even yesterday when I thought that might be an over game, we saw a 2-1 outing. And sure, we could always see these bats break out. It's always an issue when you're talking about the Dodgers and the Brewers, too, who can absolutely hit. But based on these two pitchers, I would lean to the under. Not my favorite play on the card, but then again, we got one game on the card.
Yeah, is there a way that the Brewers win this game? Because I think we've kind of decided that we're probably leaning towards the Dodgers here. But this is a home game for the Brewers, and they've been great at home all season long. It just feels like you can look at a lot of regular season metrics, but it doesn't necessarily matter if you're only talking about one team, and that's one of the best teams in baseball.
Yeah, and if you're looking at it, I mean, the line tells you it's going to be really close. The Brewers are plus 105, mm-hmm. and they have their ace on the mound. So Freddie Peralta, going back all season long, has put in clutch performance after clutch performance after clutch performance. We tend to not think of the Brewers' bats as matching the Dodgers, and really, I don't know if there's a team in baseball that can say that based on name alone. But when it comes to run differential, and we've hammered home this point again and again and again, it is the Brewers that led Major League Baseball. So maybe they don't have the name recognition, the name on the back of the jersey, but they can flat out hit. And at plus 105, I think there's some value here. Milwaukee needs this win, so I think they're live.
Yeah, if you're looking at props for this game, going to run down a couple for the pitchers. Freddie Peralta's strikeout set at 5.5, juicy over at minus 120. I will say this, even in the games that Freddie Peralta has struggled in, he has still missed a lot of bats. Had 9 strikeouts in that first appearance against the Cubs and 6 in the second one. I will say that the Dodgers don't strike out quite as much, as long as Ohtani doesn't have the golden sombrero in this game. But it is a pretty low number, and I think the sabotage factor is that maybe Freddie Peralta does not last long in this game, because let's think about this. I feel like the leash is not going to be quite as short as maybe we see in these 5-game series, and certainly not the 3-game wild card sets. But it does feel like this is, I don't want to say a must-win game for the Brewers, but how important is this win, Jenks?
Well, it's huge, because if you go up 2-0 in a baseball series, in a 7-game series, you end up winning that series 87% of the time based on postseason baseball history. So it's absolutely crucial, and especially against a team like the Dodgers. So against another team, you know, maybe where it's more evenly matched, then you say, all right, if we go down to, oh, we still have a shot. It's going to be really difficult to come back against this Dodgers team, which is clearly the favorite to win the World Series. We know why. We know how good they are across the board. So I think Milwaukee has to have this one. And also, I will say, if you look at Yamamoto, the last time he played against Milwaukee, the Brewers just went after him and knocked him out early, knocked him out of the first inning of that game. So if you're the Brewers, you can say, all right, we have faced this guy before. We've had a lot of success, and I think they can draw confidence from that.
Yeah, and Yamamoto has not been especially sharp in his last one. Gave up 6 hits against the Phillies. So I don't know. I keep going back and forth. But I will say maybe it's a good time to revisit some futures and see if we can find any value, because obviously the Dodgers look like the cream of the crop. And I understand that a lot of people have their faith in the Dodgers, but right now they're minus 120 to win the World Series. Jenks, that feels like a silly price to me. Minus 120? Like, not even plus money? So I think there's value elsewhere. The Brewers are 7-1. If you think the Brewers can get past the Dodgers, and I do think the Brewers present a pretty tough matchup for the Dodgers in the NLCS, Blue Jays are 12-1. Obviously, that one's tough with the Mariners taking a 2-game series lead over the Blue Jays after last night's win. But do you think there's any value on the Brewers 7-1 to win the World Series?
Yeah, you just have to believe they're going to win tonight. Like, they have to win tonight. But also, they have their ace on the mound. Like, Freddy Peralta is one of the best pitchers in the game, and you have to believe that home atmosphere with Peralta on the mound and the fact that the Brewers had success against Yamamoto last time out really makes them, I think, a live dog in this situation. And there is something to be said for being in a desperation spot. So I think that if you're the Brewers, you know that you can't afford to go down 2-0. I know there's the idea that you can't manage this game too tight because you're talking about a 7-game series, but also I feel like an anomaly would be, yeah, but going down 0-2 against the Dodgers and going back to LA is something we can't afford to do. So if you're Milwaukee, I would treat this game like a Game 6 or a Game 7 and do whatever it takes against this Dodgers club. It's just different than going down against any other club in Major League Baseball, so I would lean towards the Brewers here, and if you like that, then definitely think about them at 7-1, because if they win tonight, those odds will shorten.
Yeah, you can even get the Brewers plus 350 to win the National League. They're one of two teams. And I understand the Dodgers have a 1-game lead, but still, like, here's what the numbers bear out. So apparently, if you have a 1-0 series lead in a 7-game series, those teams go on to win 65% of the time. Jenks, is that number higher than you thought it would be? Honestly, I didn't think game one was that big of a deal, but I guess, you know, we've seen it in previous series where it is a big deal.
Yeah, that kind of surprises me. I thought it would have been closer to 50%. I guess it makes sense because you have the momentum, but that's higher than I thought it would be for sure.
Right. I do think it is huge that Blake Snell went 8 innings last night, because I will say the one Achilles heel it feels like of the Dodgers is their bullpen. And so the fact that they didn't have to use many arms last night is a big deal. But I do think if we are talking about a 7-game series, that's something that they're going to have to confront at some point or another. And I feel like we've seen that with all these teams, where it feels like everybody's depth has truly been tested. And the same goes for the Brewers. Like, they were saying that they really only have 1.5 starters that they trust right now. And I do think the X factor for tonight is if Freddy Peralta can go long and they don't have to use Jacob Mizorowski, that is going to be a huge advantage. Because they've already said that they don't know if Mizorowski is going to start a game in this series. But if Peralta does his job and he goes like 5 innings in this game, I feel like they could save him until game 3. And I think that would be a huge momentum swing for the Brewers.
Yeah, I think that's what they really need to happen here. And I sort of agree, too. Like, Mizorowski has been good, but, you know, obviously Major League Baseball jumped the gun, naming him an all-star, and he's been very good. I don't think he's been all-star level, but we're starting to see that, look, some of these young guys, as talented as they are, and we saw that last night with Yesavage, right? So they have knockout stuff, and they can be really good, but there is something to be said for having some sort of seasoning and some sort of experience, and things definitely change during the postseason. So just going back to the point you're making, with Freddy Peralta, for him to get the start tonight and to pitch well and to go deep would be perfect case scenario for Milwaukee.
Yeah, and plus, you want to win games at home. Like, it's wild to me that even in the other series between the Mariners and the Blue Jays, that the Mariners have taken both the games on the road. Like, that is not a normal thing. Like, you're almost expected to win your games at home. Maybe not to the extent of, like, basketball or football. But, like, still, that's a big deal that the Mariners did that. So, if the Dodgers take a 2-0 series lead and they do that, you know, both those games that are home games for the Brewers, that is going to feel like a death punch to the Brewers. And maybe it's not a death punch, but it does feel tough, especially when you have their most trusted starter, Freddie Peralta, who looks like he kind of gets frazzled when he pitches on the road in tough environments like we saw against the Cubs.
Well, fortunately for here, he's at home, so that should help him. And he's been awesome this season at home, has an ERA of less than 2. So certainly when you have your ace pitcher and, you know, they'd start him home or on the road, you want to have him in the best split possible. And this is it. So we're going to find out what he's made of tonight. But this is the perfect scenario for him to go out and get a win because he has been great in Milwaukee this season.
Yeah, and I think it would be big for Yamamoto to have a big game in this one as well because, again, trying to right the ship after, you know, giving up at least a couple runs in each of his postseason starts. And here's the thing. He's supposed to be one of the more trustworthy starters for the Dodgers because, remember, Blake Snell was coming back from an injury. Obviously, he's always had the potential. He is a Cy Young winner. But we weren't quite sure what we were going to get from him, you know, in this postseason. But, like, Yamamoto is one of their guys, too. And if this is a 7-game series, you know, the Dodgers don't have a ton of starting depth either.
No, they don't. But that's the one thing about the Dodgers which makes them so dangerous is that, you know, their bats just get them out of so many, like, less than ideal scenarios. So if they don't have the starting pitching, well, it's okay. You got the bats. If you don't have the relievers on the back end, they have Sasaki now, who's going to be a huge boon to their relief staff. But even if they get in trouble late, it's okay because you have the bats. But when you're the Dodgers, you can get away with it.
Yeah, and I will say their defense, for the most part, has been very, very good, at least in clutch situations. And that's more than we could say about some of the other teams who have been eliminated. Looking at you, Phillies, even though I know that that is a very tough play. Jenks, I've seen some people who are saying, oh, Ryan Kerkering cost so many people their jobs. Listen, if this play, one play, cost you your job, you were probably already skating on thin ice to begin with. So don't blame him. That was a tough play. All right, coming up next here on the show, switching gears back to the NFL. It's a Teaser Tuesday. I give you my favorite teaser legs for this week's slate in the NFL. It's next on the Daily Tip, presented by BetMGM.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, and we're back for more. It is Tuesday, October the 14th, and it's time for more Teaser Tuesday. So as you guys know, I absolutely love teasers. I play them all the time. And if you're new to teasers, you get 6 points in your favor, where you can do a total or a spread. I feel like spread is the best way to do it, because usually if you believe in the NFL lines being sharp, you know, this is a good way to play this. But Jenks, it has been chaos over the last 20 minutes in our house.
Mm-hmm.
My cat Dabby was currently having seizures while I was trying to talk about the NLCS. And I typed it in the chat. I was like, okay, somebody maybe can tag in here so I can go check on her. Nobody did. But she has her medicine now, so hopefully she is better. But we've had this issue for a while where she has these seizures, and it's just very jarring. While you're trying to talk about Freddie Peralta, you can hear your cat like sounding like she's dying. You're like, oh no, I have to keep going. So you just focus in on, you know, here's the outs prop for Freddie Peralta.
Oh my God, is she going. Okay? Dabby Doo, we love Dabby Doo on this show. She's not?
Not.
Do you need to go take care of her?
Oh, she's fine. Like, she's she's out of the seizure now, but it's just usually when she has these seizures, she has like 12 in a row.
Oh my gosh. But she got her medication, right?
So I feel like she does, but I was currently trying to give it to her during the break. It was not going well. So hopefully Jake can get it down her throat somehow. But I've heard a lot of people have dogs who have seizures. I haven't heard as much for cats. But it is crazy. But she takes the same medication as like humans do. It's phenobarbital. And so they don't carry it at the vet. You literally have to go to the vet. And I think, or the pharmacy. And I think I told you the story where she has to like create a profile. So they're like, Dabby Cat Buchanan, pickup for Dabby Cat Buchanan. Because she takes a human medication.
Oh my gosh. Do they force her to show her ID? Do you have to take her to like the Walgreens or the CVS and carry her, and you give her a little cat ID, push it across to the pharmacist?
No, but they definitely ask you questions. They're like, is this person's middle name Cat? You're like, no, we put that on there because Dabby is a feline. She is a feline friend. But hopefully this medication works. I'm not going to lie. I'm feeling a little rattled. Hopefully she makes it through the day because we certainly love Dabby do. But you know, it's a Tuesday, so that means one thing. It is time for Teaser Tuesday.
Chelsea is such a teaser.
All right. Step right up and try your hand at a three-leg teaser. All right. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a couple teams who are already getting points, and we're going to try to tease through multiple key numbers, because that's the goal of teasers, is you want to go through three, you want to go through six, you want to go through seven. And I'm doing that on all three of those. The only sabotage factor, and I'll start with this, is that sometimes I don't like buying high on some of these teams who have looked really good, because eventually the Reaper always comes for you, and it feels like all these teams who have looked good in the NFL eventually have a stinker. Like, we've seen it across the NFL where, you know, the Bills were looking amazing, and now it's back-to-back losses for the Bills. So keep that in mind as I read some of these legs. So first leg, we're going to start with the Colts getting 7.5 on the road at the Chargers. So the normal line in this game is Colts plus 1.5. I do think the Colts have a great chance to win this game outright, because as somebody who is a hater of the Colts, you cannot argue with some of the numbers that they have been putting up. They have the best points margin in the NFL, and we've seen them have a consistently good offense, and it's not just Daniel Jones. It's Jonathan Taylor who's having a great season for the Colts as well. So Colts plus 7.5. Next up, we're going to go to the Falcons, who I understand are playing on a short week, but plus 9 on the road at the Niners. I feel like the Falcons can at least keep it close, and I feel like when you have a good ground game like the Falcons do, and that defense, did you see what they did to Josh Allen last night? I feel like plus 9 is a solid play against the Niners. And then finally, Bucks plus 10.5. Again, this feels like a buying high situation where the Bucks have been playing out of their minds. They played in all these close games, but they should be getting healthier. I think Mike Evans should be back for this game. Plus 10.5 on the road at the Lions. Sabotage factor there being that we know the Lions can score a lot of points, but their run defense for the Bucks has been really good. So if anybody can stop that rush attack of the Lions, maybe it's the Bucks. So Jenks, Colts plus 7.5, Falcons plus 9, Bucks plus 2.5. Who ruins my teaser?
Oh, I don't know. These are all really good. I'm not quite sure. I like all these. Maybe. How many points are the Colts getting out in L.A. against the Chargers? 7.5?
Yes.
Maybe. Like, maybe the Colts at some point have some sort of step back. That's the only thing I can figure. Because, look, the Chargers are a well-coached team. They're going to be at home. They have Jim Harbaugh. So I believe in the Colts. We've seen enough now to know the numbers tell you the Colts are a very good football team. So I like the fact they're getting 7.5 out in L.A., but also maybe they're due for a clunker. I'm just trying to come up with some sort of devil's advocate play here, but I think this is a good teaser. So I'm kind of with you here. I'm just trying to poke holes in it, but I can't find many.
I think the sabotage factor is kind of what I mentioned, that eventually some of these teams are probably going to have stinkers, right? Like, yeah. I feel like we haven't seen a stinker from the Colts. And like eventually, it just feels like there's going to be that one game where either they have some bad turnovers or they just fall flat. And like the Chargers are a solid team and that is a long road trip. But still, like that's 7.5 points. So I think I like it a lot. And Jenks, I left this one out on purpose, but I feel like a lot of people are looking at the board and they're saying, Chelsea, you're not putting this in your teaser. It feels like the perfect teaser line. The Patriots are laying 7 on the road at my Titans. The Titans just fired their head coach. So in a teaser, the Patriots would be laying 1. It feels very obvious, but Jenks, I don't know if you're like this. When it comes to my teams, I don't like them ruining anything. So,
yeah.
Like, I wouldn't want the Titans to, like, ruin my teaser. I don't think it happens because, like, they couldn't even win with Brian Callahan. Not that, like, you know, he was a great head coach. But still, I feel like there's no way that the Titans win this game against the Patriots. But again, the Patriots, maybe they're due for a slip-up. Who knows?
I mean, it's a perfect letdown spot for them. But the issue is that Mike Vrabel is their head coach. So if anyone's going to make sure that they don't slip up playing Tennessee, it's going to be Mike Vrabel, right? And also, do we really think the Titans are talented enough to get some sort of bounce from an interim head coach in Mike McCoy to hang here? So I know it seems obvious, and I'm like you in that when you see an obvious play, you're like, okay, if it's too obvious, maybe it's time to look elsewhere. You see that with spreads all the time. Like, oh, look at this, a ranked team on the road getting points against an unranked team. You're like, be careful. So I understand that idea, but I feel like with Vrabel at the helm of New England, he's not going to let this team slip up. So, yeah, I think you got to tease it down.
I think the trouble is that the Titans offense just can't score points. Like, even in games where the defense keeps it close, it's just, you know, they have games where they've gotten shut out. They scored 10 points against the Raiders, who were not a defensive, you know, mismatch where you're saying, oh, this defense is really tough. No. The Raiders were one of the worst defenses, at least statistically speaking. So, like, if you can't have faith in them against the Raiders, I don't have faith in them against the Patriots. Here's another one that seems almost too good to be true. Broncos laying 7 at home against the Giants. So, in a teaser, the Broncos would be mere 1-point favorites. But, Jenks, I feel really skittish on the Giants just because it feels like we have such a wide array of outcomes where the Giants can be really good at times with Jackson Dart running all over everybody. Same goes for Cam Scataboo. But then on the other hand, you see them lose to the Saints and they look like a very young team.
Yeah, I would stay away from that one just because I think the Giants may have found something here. And so, look, Scataboo has been one of his teammates says, this guy's an idiot. But meant it in a kind way, like he's just, he's his own sort of being, right? He's in his own world. He's just yelling out things at practice. By the way, his career is going to last 3 or 4 years at this rate. Like, I have not seen a guy just try and pummel over everyone, like using his forearm just to like plow over dudes to get into the end zone. I don't care how invincible you think you are. You can only do that for so long in the National Football League before you wear out. I keep hearing people reference Earl Campbell, and of course Earl Campbell went to Texas and I followed his career back in the day, and he was just a stick of dynamite blowing up everybody in his path, so powerful. And then, you know, his body just caught up with him and he couldn't move like that anymore. So that's going to happen to Cam Scataboo unless he learns to play differently. I just don't think he's going to learn to play differently. I don't think it's in his DNA. But between his play, which I think inspires everyone on that offense, and Jackson Dart, who has looked really good, just like he did during the preseason. I'm not going to say the Giants are back or anything like that, but relative to the expectations that we saw at the beginning of the season, I think they kind of have something here on offense.
Well, especially like if you're looking at the normal game spread and they're getting 7 points, because temperature check on the Broncos. I am somebody who is a big believer in the Broncos going into the season. But I'm not going to lie. I feel like their offense has looked pretty flat. I understand last week was overseas in London. But like scoring 13 points. Like I understand they beat the Eagles. But I don't know. This feels like a very mediocre team relative to the expectations that I once had for the Broncos.
Yeah, I just don't know if Bo Nix has taken that next step. He's close. I feel like he's right there. But he's still sort of flashing and not necessarily you know, elevating to that next plateau. And so we saw that over the weekend against the Jets. Jets have a decent defense. But as bad as the Jets were, Broncos won that game by a couple of points, and it's because they couldn't move the football. So there will be times where Bo Nix looks really good on offense, and certainly it helps to have a guy like Sean Payton, but he really hasn't become that guy in his second year, and he's got plenty of time to do it, but I think that's the real issue. And of course, when you're a young guy going up against that Giants defensive front, we saw the Giants defensive front against the Chargers give Justin Herbert all sorts of trouble. They can absolutely do the same to Bo Nix.
I think if you think that's the case, maybe the total is worth a play. 40.5 is getting into the territory that makes me a little nervous. But I will say the Broncos have had a consistently good defense. They just need the offense to catch up. All right, hour three is next here on the show, and we will relive our biggest lessons learned from both games on Monday Night Football. It's next here on the Daily Tip, presented by BetMGM.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.